This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We're live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Got a lot to get to on the show today, but we got to start with two things immediately. Mm-hmm. One, I love the haircut. I don't know why you're so sensitive about it.
We spent a lot of time on this.
It needs to be said.
Yeah.
It looks great.
I appreciate it. It was a little aggressive, I think, but, you know, as you could tell, I'm leaking confidence at this point.
So. I would like you to repeat for our audience, if you don't mind, what you just said in the commercial before we welcomed them in.
Oh, about, well, so it's much shorter on the side, so I can feel air on my head and my neck, and it just feels like a little old man's, like, gently blowing air on the back of my neck
right
now.
It's beautiful.
It's not, it doesn't make me feel too comfortable.
Okay. Well, I think it looks great. Get excited. I feel bad that you've had to deal with every single person that has encountered you today bringing it up.
Well,
but it
I
looks
also,
good. It was just very long yesterday, so it looks short today.
It was long, although the length on top is still the same. And I will say, what I should not have done was mention it when I did my hit earlier today with folks by Beating by the Books, because I was told that we've had a lot of behind the scenes with my shot and everything like that and the technical difficulties when I'm at home. So I said, you know, the shot looks the best it's ever looked. And I said, it's because I got a haircut.
Beautiful.
It was all downhill.
It's a smooth transition, though.
Yeah.
It's well played. It's like you've done this before.
Yes, very much so.
So that's item one. Item two, don't let the Rockies get hot. And you, my friend, are getting some well-deserved praise online. So we talked about it numerous times on the show yesterday. You said that you thought that the Marlins were live. You ended up betting the team total for Colorado as your best bet, and I'm only paying attention to this game yesterday, by the way, because of you. And so I text you when the team total hits, and I'm like, let's see if they can hang on.
They
ultimately do. They get the win.
Yeah, it's funny. As I made the joke, like, I'm never one to turn down praise. Thank you very much. But I am being, like, I'm very much, like, you would think I had, like, a 35-1 ticket on, like, something yesterday that hit. No, just pick the Rockies to potentially win the game. I just think it goes back to, we talk about this all the time. We'll have more on this in the game today. But there was a great article out from, I think it was David Purdom, about, like, the Rockies being, like, a bookmaker's nightmare. And subsequently, a great interview with Bennett here at Circa with Mitch and Paul. And Bennett's whole point was, like, no, look, like, it's not anything that's a problem, because we as odds makers can make the price, right? If we're not getting loaded up with Colorado opponents, because we can make the price such that we are attracting Rockies money. And I think we're just at that point in general now with Colorado, where, again, like, we're talking about yesterday, we talked about the pricing there. They closed as minus 200 favorites yesterday, multiple spots, the Marlins. Today, like, I'll put it like this, and this is how I put it to Jensen and to Dave this morning. You have a starter today. Let's remove all the labels. You have a starter today that has an ERA of 10 over his last subsequent, like, last thing, like, four starts or so. He's been absolutely killed. There's no indicators whatsoever that this man has been pitching particularly well enough to even lay a minus, like, minus 120 price. You're laying $170 with him today. Like, I just,
it's, I think, even higher. I see 180.
Yeah. So, like, I think we're at this point now where we're just, I think at least in this series, it's worth betting the Rockies. So we'll see if it comes to fruition again today.
I do want to say, though, what it took for the Rockies to get a win yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
The Marlins were 3 of 16 with runners in scoring position.
But that's actually, so I brought that up today too. That's actually part of the point, right? It's like, the Marlins are a bad team.
Yes.
You know what bad teams do? They don't hit with runners in scoring position. They screw things up. And so, like, even then, because it was a little luck, it's baseball. But it's like, dude, that's what bad teams do.
Yep.
They don't take advantage of the things that are given to them. And we'll see if they can do it again today. But Sandy's on the hill. Alcantara, he is, I think now, like you said, minus 180. This is the scoreboard from yesterday as they closed minus 205 at some spots. The Marlins did yesterday.
Can they win two in a row? Lots of baseball on deck today, especially since we have VSiN's Adam Burke. He's going to join us coming up for the final half hour of the show in hour two. I also, yesterday, baseball-wise, was right on the thought process for Padres-Giants, which was nice.
Yes,
a 1-0, 10-inning under there. The Padres,
like, the Giants win.
I was going to say, sorry about the Giants layer of that. But you're right on the Padres team total, too.
Mm-hmm.
So even though they win, just one. But for the Giants, I know that we were rooting for that dub, so that's unfortunate. I was a loser on the Dodgers. I thought Shohei was going to get me there with the walk-off at the end of the game.
Almost had it.
Close.
Drove in the game-tying run, but ultimately dies in the corner. But still, like, that was a great game. Lindor remains hot. That should be a fun series as we move forward. But, man, the baseball was pretty good yesterday for the most part. And today's slate looks really cool, too.
Yeah, we got Jack Cags today. We talked a lot about that yesterday. He'll make his big league debut for the Kansas City Royals. So lots of MLB. You also, by the way, just real quickly, sorry, since I've got baseball in the brain, college baseball yesterday, your Tennessee play comes through.
Oh, how about that? Yeah, Tennessee comes through. The LSU Tigers go down 5-1 to
Crazy.
Little Rock.
Come all the way back.
I laid 2.5 on the run run line with LSU in game because I was like, all right, let's root for something here. So far, we're running hot. We'll see if we can do it. LSU comes back, covers that, wins that game too. I'm very excited. So Jensen this morning asked me, hey, what are you most excited about for our upcoming trip to Omaha next week? And to me, my answer was, outside of drinking on air, it is really getting ready for what seems to be like a very fun baseball tournament. That we are getting national seeds getting knocked out left and right. Some of these teams look very competitive. The SEC might not be as dominant as we think it is. So to have that set up for what seems to be maybe a really good tournament on paper with some volatility to it, I think is going to be incredible. I can't wait for that next week.
And what you said about the SEC in particular, had a record 13 teams in the overall field. Now we're down to four. It's all going to be super fun. I don't know if you watch any of the softball either, but to see Oklahoma bounced.
Texas Tech bounced them, right? Yes. So dude, baseball's great, man.
The five Pete no more. Yeah, all of this, just baseball, softball, all of it has been a ton of fun. And we'll preview a lot of college baseball tomorrow, especially as we kind of get set for those super regionals that are going to get underway beginning on Friday. But lots to get to on this show today. So if you would, producer Brian Ortega in the back, set us up with the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the Rundown.
Number three in our top three items that we're going to get to today on Money Moves, the OTAs continuing in the NFL, and we got a handful of news items, including the fact that Stephon Diggs has made his way from the boat to the practice field.
You know, yesterday, this will make sense in a second, yesterday you gifted us with chocolates from faraway lands and whatnot. I don't think the powder in the video made it in the carry-on luggage for Stephon Diggs all the way back up to New England.
It wasn't Fun Dip?
No, it was not. I mean, it was Fun Dip.
It was
Fun Dip, for sure. But I would say that, look, I've seen a lot of, like, freaking out about this. I think First Take that, is he a distraction and all that. Look, Diggs is a receiver coming off of a major injury who's a little bit longer in the tooth. I still feel very highly about New England, regardless of what happens with him, his status, all of these sort of things. Florio had a great piece about, like, his contract, the way it breaks down, how they theoretically could get out of it if he doesn't pass the physical, who knows. But I think they're going to be fine. I think we'll get past this. It's just free time. Who cares? Yeah. As long as he wasn't doing it, he handed it off in the video. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we didn't see anything with him, you know, taking anything. Just giving it to somebody else because he's a good guy. He's trying to share the wealth.
We did see him slapping some rear end on some of those videos.
Yeah. That we did. Also, with that in mind, a key piece, they need wide receiver help. So, hopefully, Stephon Diggs can be that addition.
Really threw you for a loop on that slapping rear end.
I didn't know where to go after that. We have the NBA and NHL finals, of course, getting set to begin this week. And today we're going to take a deeper dive into both of those series when it comes to the finals stat leader markets. I know in the NBA in particular, which we'll do in about, 10 minutes or so, you already have a couple bets in pocket.
Yep, and much like Cardi B's rear end, one of these dogs is fat. We got a big 66-1 long shot worth taking here, I think, in one of these markets.
See if you shake it up.
See? Come on now.
And we'll get things started here the last couple minutes of this opening segment with some injury news in both the NBA and NHL Stanley Cup Finals. So Jairus Walker looks like he's going to miss the first two games of the NBA Finals for the Indiana Pacers. How much does this impact anything for you?
It's not going to change anything in the big picture or with the odds. You know, look, he averaged 7 minutes per game in the playoff games leading up to the NBA Finals. It's more of like, hey, in the midst of the first two games, if there's any point where Carlisle feels like, hey, I've got to pull a lever and get like a 6'7", 6'8" stretch forward out there to help us out that can rebound and shoot, like, yeah, maybe that's going to hurt him a bit. But I don't think, like, if you thought anything about this series, us finding out that Jairus Walker is not going to play in the first two games is not going to make you go, whoa, man, I got to rethink everything. He's a very good player, very good upside, and I think he's going to be a very good player for them in the long term. But in this series, probably just like he was throughout the entire postseason, which was a 7-ish minutes per game guy that might come in every once in a while in some mop-up duty.
Injured his right ankle in the Eastern Conference Final clinching game. Rick Carlisle in the official statement that he made on 107.5 The Fan on Monday. So he's going to be out for a while. I don't know how long. He certainly will not play the first two games. Spread right now sitting 9. We saw this open 8.5, got up to 9.5. Now we're sitting at the 9. We have seen pretty consistent money toward the over, though, from 229.5 up to 231, some 231.5. Yeah. And I know you said yesterday on the show that you do lean over as far as this game one goes. You agree with that movement?
Yeah. But look, if you haven't bet this game over, I would sit back and wait a little bit. We generally see buyback on these line moves for the most part, so it might get up to like 231.5 consensus. Again, we still have until Thursday before this thing starts, so the market might slowly creep up, and then you'll get some folks, I think, that buy back on the under. We usually see it, so I think I'd sit back and wait. You'd probably be able to get back to 230.5 and bet that thing over for this game one, but again, like back to the opening total, I agree it's too low. Like we talked about about yesterday, OKC is going to be more than willing to run up and down the floor with Indiana should it want to. It's a very good transition defense. It likes to run itself, the team. That is, you know, when you're talking about off of steals, getting out in transition, getting free buckets. So I think it's going to be a pretty quick game. Now, possession and tempo is a very big part of it. But you can have a high possession game but still go under because one team is really shutting down the other. So you hope that doesn't happen because this is a big spread. But I do think playing this over is the way to go.
And then real quickly, in the NHL Stanley Cup Final, we mentioned this briefly kind of in passing yesterday, but I think worth reiterating while on the topic that Connor McDavid did leave the ice on Sunday with a trainer at practice. Chris Knobloch, their head coach, did say he expects this not to be an issue. He'll be ready to go game one on Wednesday. And I think just reassuring anybody who did bet Edmonton or likes the Oilers in this series that the defending Conn Smythe winner and Conn Smythe favorite best player in the world is going to be available and ready to go.
Yeah, Hyman, you said, is not that big of a deal. This might
this
be a big deal. Yeah, this might matter if he can't play, but I would expect that he's – whatever's bothering him, I would expect that he's going to play through it and play.
And we see this in hockey all the time with anybody. Like, Roope Hintz was playing through a broken ankle, right? This is what these guys do, and if for Connor McDavid it's just a little thing, there's no doubt in my mind that he will be out there doing whatever it takes to be the best player on the ice. And with that, as we said, we're going to get into some of those series markets and props. There is one that I really like Connor McDavid in that you're still getting plus money on him for that I think is a little bit too much. So with that in mind, we're just getting started here on Money Moves. So much more to get to. When we come back, we're going to take a deeper dive into that OKC Pacers series, where things sit right now. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the second largest series favorite that we've seen in the last 20 years. What might that look like from a prop perspective, though? We'll be right back on Money Moves.
Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about this, fans? How would you like to play the Circa Survivor or Circa Million contest for free this upcoming NFL season? Well, Winner's Circle Proxy is giving away one free $1,000 entry to each contest plus full proxy service, and get this, you'll be paired with a VSiN host for strategy all season long. Enter now for your chance to win. Head over to winnerscircleproxy.com/VSiN. That's winnerscircleproxy.com/VSIN. Join the fun. See if you can get a free entry in Circa Survivor or Circa Million. Alongside JVT, Stormy Bonantoni with you. We'll get into a little NFL later on in the show, but we're going to kick things off here, getting into the NBA Finals. OKC and the Pacers getting set to go head-to-head on Thursday. The Pacers, a massive underdog, so much so, should they upset the Thunder, it would be the largest underdog win in the last 50 years of the NBA Finals. The Thunder, minus 700. Pacers, 5-1 on the series price. Game one, still a few days out, though. So with that in mind, wanted to take a look at some of these series leader markets. And you, at the end of the show, I did not give you nearly enough time to dive into some of the bets that you had, notably in the assists leader market.
Yeah, so these are all pretty interesting, and I was actually bitching to Kelly and Zach in our Harvard Handicappers group chat, rest in peace, that there wasn't enough. Like, last year, there were so many different markets that were available. You could bet, like, over or under points per game for guys, or rebounds per game, or assists per game. There were statistical head-to-heads, you know, player X versus player Y in total rebounds for the series, all sorts of things. So I'm still waiting for more stuff to get hung. But assist leader, I think, is a very interesting market. So obviously, you have a massive favorite at the top in Tyrese Halliburton. He is minus 900 to do so. Now, I think he should be the odds-on favorite. We know what his game is. He is a very good passer, facilitator. Having said that, I don't think he should be this big of a favorite, Stormy, because he is playing an incredible defensive opponent, and there is a reality in which those assist opportunities just aren't there for him in this series. I think the Thunder are going to be more than willing to stay at home on some of these guys, match up with Tyrese Halliburton one-on-one with the guys that they have, whether it be Tyrese Halliburton or Lou Dort or Jalen Williams to match up on Halliburton. I think that this number is too high. He should be favored again, but I don't think he should be favored to this degree. So if I'm right, well, we start to look around. The two things that suck out: Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, very obviously at 5-1. Shai's a brilliant passer. In terms of regular season assist rate, it was at 29.9% here in this postseason. It's at 31.9%. Getting 5-1 on Shai to lead the series in assists, I think, is very, to me, it's valuable as I measure it. So I put a play on him. I mentioned the play that was fat, much like a hip-hop artist's rear end. Jalen Williams was the other one that I played at 66-1. I think in some spots he's like 50-1. You can go shop around. MGM is where I found the 66-1. Similar concept here. Williams is actually a pretty good passer. In the regular season, the assist rate or the amount of buckets that were assisted when he was on the floor was floating right around 25%. He's at 22%, but he's always been very good for his position. And I think, again, if we're rolling with the concept that the odds are too high for Tyrese Halliburton to lead the series in assists, there is value in other places. And I think Shea and Jalen Williams both to lead the series in total assists is worth it. So, obviously, I feel better about the Shea one. He's 5-1. He's the more likely candidate. But I think Jalen Williams is worth a long shot play there, too, especially at that 65-1, 66-1 price tag.
Well, and to your point, do that shopping around because every book is going to have this played a little bit differently. I was even looking, because we were talking briefly earlier just about how Jack Caglione's making his debut today, I was looking at some of his numbers for a home run. You could find as high as 8-1 in one shop in particular, and then everywhere else was like plus 460. So that's see really if you can find some of those rogue numbers out there. Let's go from assists, though, to points, and we go from one big favorite to an even bigger one. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, minus 3,500 to lead the series in points. Jalen Williams is your second shot at 25-1. Pascal Siakam, 28-1. And then Halliburton, 60-1. Halliburton in particular, only average, I think it was 12 points per game his last four games against OKC. So like he, as a long shot, that's not a place I would want to go. Is there anybody to bet, though, in a market where the favorite is so large like this? Like, would you have any interest on Jalen Williams since his three-point shooting has started to tick up or anything like that?
Yeah, I think this is a somewhat accurately priced market. I think you can then quibble, too, with like, all right, if it's a little bit higher, like, should it be like minus 3,000 or so? Where would you find that? I think Pascal Siakam at 28-1 is somewhat interesting. Look, Siakam had an incredible Eastern Conference Finals, as we know, winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP. If you look at his game log and what he has done up to this point, we know that he has scored over 30 points in three of the games that they have played there. He is capable of really going off and scoring at a really high rate. He's also capable of being relatively quiet. We have seen quite a few games in this postseason run where he scored under 20 points. It was actually two wins at Cleveland in the series there in the Eastern Conference semifinals. So I think if you're going to take like a shot, because there's a reality right where Thunder are the dominant team. They're blowing out the Pacers. And so then a guy like Siakam is really ratcheting up and getting like garbage time points and maybe able to like sneak past Shea Gilgeous-Alexander for this in terms of total points for the series. But I think that's as far as I'm going. Like, I'll book T.J. McConnell most points in this series for you, right? I'll give you 1,000-1. I'll give you Miles Turner. I'll give you all of these guys. Those should be much, much longer than what they're really priced at. I think really the only option that I would even think about doing would be Pascal Siakam.
Okay, I was looking even at, because you mentioned some of those other markets that aren't available yet, there are some that's like to average 30-plus points per game in the final. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander to average 30 or more points per game. Minus 450.
Yeah.
Even that, that's just crazy. Because that's so expected with him. Jalen Williams, your second shot at 15-1, and Siakam at 16-1. The one market that I actually had interest in, and I'm curious your thoughts on it, is the rebounds. I view this as a two-horse race. I'm sure you do, too, with Chet Holmgren and Isaiah Hartenstein. Hartenstein, plus 195, was the team leader in the regular season, averaging 10.5 rebounds per game. Do you think that that makes sense, especially considering you got Chet as minus 185 favorite, and he's led the team in the playoffs in that stat, but is Hartenstein available live?
So I'm glad we brought this up, not only for this, but for Hartenstein himself. I actually am very anti-Hartenstein in this series.
Oh, okay.
So I think because we have seen in his last three games here, especially against Minnesota, his minutes severely declined. Under, I think he was averaging about 16
down four minutes.
Yeah. And so in the last three in total, I think he averaged about like 16 minutes per game. But the whole reason why I think you're not, that Hartenstein kind of gets the short end of the stick. First off, when Chet on the floor, their offense completely opens up. He's a floor spacing big. He also provides you rim protection. If you look at net rating, offensive rating, defensive rating, they are miles ahead of whenever Hartenstein's on the floor by himself versus when Chet's on the floor by himself. You don't need to if you're Oklahoma City. I think we brought this up with Zach yesterday. I don't think you're going to need to play your double big lineup, right? Like you had to against a team like Minnesota because they're a big team, right? It's Julius Randle and it's Rudy Gobert and it's a very sizable team. So you kind of want to match that. Well, Indiana's not really that. Indiana's a somewhat smallish team. Miles Turner, obviously, at center, but there's not much size after him and physical size at that. And I think they just haven't been great in Hartenstein's minutes. So I think he's going to be relegated to coming off the bench more often than not, playing less than 20 minutes a game. So I think that opens this up. It goes back to what I was complaining about. I really wanted to play against Hartenstein in some of the series props or under on like a rebounds per game prop for him for the series because I think that he is going to he's not going to get what we expect from his regular season work. And so thus, like, if you look at this, all right, where else would you look? I actually think this is one of the more random markets. I think Holmgren deserves to be favored. But outside of that, you have two teams that are somewhat small. You have two teams that aren't really great rebounding teams. Indiana actually has not been a great rebounding team. They've been average to below average. I think there's a lot of guys that can win this thing potentially. I mean, look at this, for example. The starting center for one of the teams is 50-1 in Miles Turner. To do this, and I think, you know, Kelly likes Turner to do that. I think that you could go a bunch of different places in this market.
See, that's interesting, because to me, and like looking at that odds board, mm-hmm. you understand, given the rebounding advantage that OKC is going to have in this set, that four of the top five options here are from the Thunder. But in my brain, I'm glad that you said that about Hardenstein, because in my brain, I was thinking that maybe the minutes downtick was a short-term thing and that we were going to see him sure. getting back to his kind of normal numbers and normal time, because his average in the playoffs is, like, overall 4 minutes fewer-ish than he played throughout the course of the regular season. And I just thought maybe in the NBA Finals, most important time, that one of your really good players is going to step up and be better.
Yeah, I think it's just more about matching what Indiana wants to do from a spacing sure. and scoring standpoint. Hartenstein's not really going to give you that. Again, he's a good player. It's not like he's going to get eliminated from the series. But these are the things you kind of want to look at when you're talking about series leaders and rebounds, assists, all, like, what do these matchups look like? Who's going to get more minutes? What do you think some of the adjustments are going to look like? And if there is a player, like, this was the mentality last year going into the NBA Finals. One of the things that really helped me have a good finals was if you read the writing on the wall, it seemed like this was going to be a non-Daniel Gafford series for the Mavericks last year. Because every adjustment was pointing to, if there's going to be one guy who gets his minute cut, is going to be Gafford because of just the way the series broke down. I think Hartenstein is the guy here. Okay. So that's going to be – that's why, too, I can't find my series-long props. So to start, like, under points and rebounds for Hartenstein, things like that are what I'm going to start to try to do once the series begins.
Do you think more of that stuff will become available, like, tomorrow?
I'm hoping so. I'm like, maybe when we get closer, that'll be – because it was all available last year, multiple books, but this year not so much. So I'm hoping there's something out there. I've been looking around quite a bit.
One bet I did make that's not a series stat thing, but it was just an interesting prop that I came across. I'm curious your thoughts in is, will the Thunder go undefeated at home? Only -120 yeah. for that one. Do you think that's a reasonable price? Because yeah. they've been nails at home.
They have been. I saw that in the rundown and I was like, I'm not going to tell you no. They've been a completely different team at home. Like, when you look at the way that they have handled teams at home, their net rating. I know a lot of people, because you hear the conversation, like, well, they blew out, like, a Denver. No, yes, they blew them out at home. That's what matters. They've been incredible at home. I would not steer you away from that at all.
They've been incredible at home and were incredible all regular season yep. against the Eastern Conference. So kind of, like, putting yes. those two things together.
29-1 against yeah. the East, something like that.
And their yep. lone loss was to the Cavs,
yep.
who were pretty good in the regular season, if you recall. Okay, on that, we got to take a quick timeout. When we come back, Ian McMillan of Sports Illustrated is going to drop by. We will get into his picks on the Stanley Cup final, as well as some other things. Don't miss it. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
JVT and Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on Money Moves. Stanley Cup final getting underway tomorrow north of the border in Edmonton. Oilers a -120 series favorite with home ice in the set. They're -130 for game one coming up on Wednesday against the Florida Panthers. A rematch, of course, of last year's final that went all the way to seven games. To help us break it all down and more, we welcome in Ian McMillan on the Progressive Guest Line, senior editor at Sports Illustrated, also host of the Bacon Bets pod. You can follow him on X at Ian McBets. And we were talking about it in the break. You are almost over the Leafs being out of it. Stanley Cup final week without Toronto. I'm sorry for you, my friend.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm kind of happy there was a little bit of a break between the conference finals and the Stanley Cup final, because I needed it. I actually didn't watch the Eastern Conference final. I could not actually physically stomach watching the Florida Panthers play in that series. I watched a good amount of the Western Conference final, but I needed a break from seeing and watching this Panthers team and the guys on there. I don't want to see Brad Marchand on my television again, but I think I've had enough of a break. I'll be able to tune into the Cup final.
All right, so can we trust your analysis to be level-headed here as we head into the Stanley Cup final? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I think so. Listen, I think the odds are set pretty well for this final, but I do lean a little bit more towards the Oilers for three main reasons. Number one, I think it's the obvious Stuart Skinner is going to be the key player in this entire series. And he has played a lot better since returning in between the pipes halfway through that series against the Golden Knights. We all know this. Will he be able to keep it up in the Cup final? That's another question. But he has definitely been playing better. He looks a lot more loose, a lot more relaxed in the net. Number two, the Oilers have gotten a lot more support from their supporting cast these playoffs compared to last year. Last year was basically all McDavid and Draisaitl. This year, we're seeing a little bit more help from that supporting cast, which is going to be huge against a Panthers team that has some of the best depth in the NHL. And finally, from an X's and O's standpoint, I think this is going to be a fascinating series because the Panthers play a very aggressive counter-attack style of hockey. And last year in the Cup Finals, it caught the Oilers off guard, and they didn't know how to deal with it. They then figured that out a little bit, and that's a big reason why they're able to come back and force a Game 7. So I think the Oilers, from an X's and O's standpoint, are going to be a lot more prepared, a lot better prepared to deal with this Panthers team. And they're, like I said, their aggressive counterattack, which has caught so many teams off guard, including the Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals. So I do think the slight edge goes to the Oilers. And then obviously they have home ice advantage this time around as well.
And I don't know how much stock you put into this, if at all, but the intangible element of them not seeming so emotional and overjoyed coming out of the conference finals, like they were just so happy to finally be there and to have that chance. It seemed a lot more workmanlike coming out of the Western Conference final for them and being as solid as they were against Dallas. Do you feel like the mentality of losing the Cup final last year for them is something that can really drive and motivate them even more against Florida this time around?
Yeah, for sure. And I think I saw a quote from McDavid saying that last year they were just like emotionally tired and exhausted by the time they got to the Cup final. And now they feel a lot more energized, like they have the ability to really, you know, start off on the right foot in the Cup final. And I'm sure you guys have brought this up, but the trend that we see this year, Gretzky, his first Cup was in a rematch against the team he lost to the year before, is the same with Crosby against the Red Wings. So I love that narrative. McDavid now winning his first Cup, hopefully in a rematch against the team that beat him the year before. So seems to be a trend amongst the hockey goats to win their first Cup in a rematch.
Do you like any props for the series at all?
I do like this game, the series to go to six. So I guess Oilers to win 4-2 in the series at plus 550. I'm also looking at the Conn Smythe market. I do think there's a little bit of value on Leon Draisaitl to win it. At 8-1, obviously McDavid's the story of the final, but he does only have one more point than Draisaitl heading into the final. So if Draisaitl ends up having a very good final, finishes, you know, 4 or 5 more points for the playoffs than McDavid, he has a chance to win this award. So, I mean, 8-1, I think he's worth a little bit of sprinkle to win the Conn Smythe as a playoff MVP as well.
How about game one coming up tomorrow? The Oilers, we mentioned, a little bit of a bigger favorite in game one than in the series, around minus 130, total 6.5. How do you see that first game playing out?
Yeah, I like the under in this one. I think in general, this total is the series is going to be a little bit more low scoring than a lot of people expect. So we see a 6.5 total there in game one. I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of the games after game one end up being settling at 6. Like I said, last year, I think the Oilers figured out the aggressive counterattack of the Panthers. I think that's going to play a big role. Both teams have actually played pretty well defensively throughout the playoffs. They're averaging a combined around 21 high danger scoring chances per game. And then, of course, there's the goalies for both sides. Bobrovsky has played really well. As I mentioned earlier, Stuart Skinner has played well since he was handed back the starting job against the Golden Knights. So, I was a little surprised to see some 6.5s available out there. So I'll be taking the under on the total. It's going to be my best bet for game one.
All right, let's head to Major League Baseball. I know you got a couple of plays here. Phillies in an interesting series against the Toronto Blue Jays, keeping with the Canadian theme. What do we have for Christopher Sanchez today?
Yeah, I've been betting a lot of walks allowed props this MLB season. I've done pretty well with him, and I love this spot tonight for Christopher Sanchez, over 1.5 walks allowed. He's walked at least 2 batters in 8 of his 11 starts this season, and now he's taken on a Blue Jays lineup who, that might be their biggest strength this season, has been drawing walks. Over the past 14 days, they've walked on 11.4% of their plate appearances, highest rate in the majors. Also, second highest walk rate against lefties in the majors this season, walking on 10.9% of plate appearances. So, yeah, a little bit of a niche market, but Christopher Sanchez over 1.5 walks allowed. Love that bet tonight against the Jays.
Jays on a nice little stretch here, though. Won 5 straight and 6 of their last 7. I saw you tweeted as well. They're 2-0 when you are on site. Did you end up putting that in pocket because you're going to the game tonight?
I did, yes. Obviously, that doesn't mean anything, but they are 2-0. In the games I've attended, I'm going to be there tonight, so I did bet on them. I mean, listen, if I'm going to go watch my favorite team play in person, no matter what, you know, kind of the numbers say, maybe what the objective right bet is, I'm going to bet on my favorite team to win. I'm not going to be there in person and cheer for the other side. So Yes, they are 2-0. We'll see if they can go 3-0 in games they've attended this season.
All right. Anything else in Major League Baseball that you got?
Yeah, I like Cade Horton, starter for the Cubs, under a strikeout total. You can get a plus money under 3.5 at plus 110. He's only gone over this total twice in his four starts this season, and in one of those was against the Rockies, who I have pretty sure have the highest strikeout rate in Major League Baseball this season. And the Nationals have done a really good job, actually, this season in not striking out. They've shown some great plate discipline. Second lowest strikeout rate in the majors over the past 2 weeks, 18.1% of their plate appearances. Cade Horton under 3.5 strikeouts. Not a very high strikeout total, but I still think the under is the play there at plus money.
Ian McMillan, Sports Illustrated, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And since we've got this north of the border theme, we might as well hit you with one more. The RBC Canadian Open coming up this week at TPC Toronto for the first time. So it's a new venue for the Canadian Open, new venue for the PGA Tour. What should people know about it and maybe the skill sets and players they should be targeting?
Yeah, number one thing is it's going to be long. It is the 13th longest course that the PGA Tour has visited since 2022. It measures at 7,389 yards as a par 70. Target guys who are long off the tee and are good with their long irons are at the very least good in one of those facets. It's going to be a long course for these players. Actually, I think it's kind of comparable to Quail Hollow, which we saw the PGA Championship he played at just a few weeks ago. So I think if you want to target some guys who are good at the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, you're on the right path for this week's event.
Any guys that you'll like to win it outright?
Yeah, listen, I'm a Canadian. It's a Canadian Open. I'll be there in person. I got to give out a Canadian to win this thing. I mean, Nick Taylor did do it 2 years ago, so it is possible for a Canadian to win this. I'm going to go Taylor Pendrith. I got him at 35-1 yesterday morning. His odds have come down. So you see there now, he's 28-1. He seems to be a little bit of a popular play, but he is a perfect course fit for TPC Toronto. As I said, you have to be great off the tee. You have to be long off the tee. You have to be great with their long irons. And that's exactly what Taylor Pendrith is. Also, he has played this course more than anyone else in the field. If you go to TPC Toronto, almost every single time you go, you're going to hear the groundskeeper saying, oh, you just missed Taylor Pendrith. He was here this past weekend. He actually competed here at a PGA Tour Americas, back then as PGA Tour Canada event at this course in 2019. He finished in second place. So he knows this course better than anyone else. He's also coming into this event in great form. He was T5 at the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow, which I said was a comparable course, T12 at the Memorial last week. And not only did he finish T12 at the Memorial last week, he was second in the field in strokes gained tee to green behind only Scottie Scheffler. So from tee to green, it was Scottie number one. It was Taylor Pendrith number two. So he checks everything that you want in an outright bet this week. He's got the course history. He's got the form. He's got the course fit. And of course, it's going to be fun to cheer for a Canadian to win the Canadian Open for the second time in 3 years. So love Taylor Pendrith to win this week.
Great breakdowns, Ian. We appreciate your time. Thank you for this.
Thank you so much, guys. Take care. Good luck with your bets today.
Back at you. Ian McMillan, everybody, make sure you check out the Bacon Bets pod. And again, follow him on X. We're going to take a quick timeout. I saw that Falcons helmet in the background of his shot. Mm-hmm. One of a handful of NFL topics we're going to get to on the other side of this break. What the heck is going on with Kirk Cousins and the Falcons, but also Stephon Diggs back at OTAs with the New England Patriots and the San Francisco 49ers. Made a new addition to their defensive line, one that I think is actually pretty good, that I know some
your
people
49ers.
Not thinking. But San Francisco 49ers. Don't go anywhere. More money moves coming up after a quick timeout.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To close out hour one here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, JVT, and Stormy Bonantoni with you. My San Francisco 49ers, as you so eloquently put it last segment, continue to renovate their defensive line headed into the 2025 season, adding former Jets and then Eagles edge rusher Bryce Huff officially yesterday. Per ESPN's Adam Schefter, the Eagles will take on just over $9 million of Huff's salary. San Francisco will handle the other $8 million while also sending them a day 3 pick in the draft. And I think people naturally are going to be really critical given the performance that he had last year and the numbers being 13 tackles, 2.5 sacks in 12 games. It was a healthy scratch by the time we got to the Super Bowl at the end of the year. But I think especially reuniting with Robert Sala, where he did have a lot of individual success with the Jets. Sala, of course, now the DC in San Francisco once again. I think the two of them back together, him playing opposite Nick Bosa, that it's a recipe for him to get back to form. I feel like last year was more of the anomaly than the norm for Bryce Huff.
Yeah, I would agree with you in that sentiment. 481 pass rushing snaps in that year with the New York Jets. 67 total pressures, 10 sacks, 12 hits, 45 hurries. Had 10 tackles as well. He was very good. And so I think in this scheme, it's going to help. He's going to have a lot of help out there. He's not also asked to be like the guy. Mm-hmm. He wasn't really asked to be that guy in Philly either. But still, there's not going to be as much pressure for him to win those pass rushing snaps. And that followed a year as well under Sala, which he was very good in a much shorter sample size. So I would say yes. I think that is it's a good acquisition for San Francisco. I also think zooming out, it's just one of many pieces where I think it sets up your team to have a very strong year mm-hmm. next year, at least in terms of record. I don't think I'd be surprised if we're looking at this and saying that San Francisco comes out on top with the best record in the NFC.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah. And I think that they're appropriately priced to get back on track. The win total sitting at 10.5 when you look at the division, plus 150. And consider, I'm not putting them on par necessarily with the Eagles and Lions talent-wise in May, although we talked yesterday with the Frank Ragnow retirement, and the Lions are poised to potentially take a pretty decent step back from the 15-win season that they had a year ago. So I really like San Francisco's chances coming into this year. Last year, the 6 wins, the injuries that they had to account for coming in, like, just unheard of, you know, that mm-hmm. it's impossible to win when you have so many guys that have gone down. Recent reports on Christian McCaffrey are that he's going to be good to go back. And I know that he's had a lot of injury history issues in the past, but if he is back to form, he is a cheat code for the 49ers. If their defense under Robert Sala can get back to what they were a few years ago, I think a lot of things match up, especially given this schedule, for them to have a really good year.
Yeah, so you can get him at plus 650 to be the number one seed in the NFC. You can get him 13-1 to have the most wins in the NFL total. I think both of those are achievable mm-hmm. goals. Again, easiest schedule in the NFL, should be noted by opponent strength of schedule. And as much as you want to, not you, but like generally, as much as you would like to criticize Shanahan, he generally has this team playing very well. In 4 out of the last 5 years, he has gotten this team to double-digit victories. He has won at least 2 playoff games in each of the four years that he has made it into the postseason. He's been pretty good. So I'm going to feel pretty confident that this team, if healthy and all together, is going to get it back on track from a win standpoint. Mm-hmm. You throw in the fact that Philly's got one of the harder schedules in the NFL that they have to deal with. Look, 49ers, I think this is a credit to them. They generally, when they're healthy, don't lose the games they shouldn't.
Right.
This should be a team that I think is going to win 11 or more games. And again, instead of betting over 10.5 at like that, whatever it is, plus 110 price, if you think that they're going to be as good as I do, I would put a little bit on those, like number one seed yeah. NFC in most wins, because I do think that is a very strong reality for San Francisco.
I do like those angles. And even just looking at the schedule in the corner of our eye, they start the season against the Seahawks, they yep. get the Saints, the Cardinals, the Jags. Like, they have a lot of potential to start out hot here early on. And I mentioned it a couple weeks ago when they got the Fred Warner deal signed too. I think that's another thing that is good for San Francisco, that they got their big contracts out of the way ahead of training camp and all that.
Look at that schedule.
I know. I
mean, the way it sets up for this team, I mean, they should be able to really push for a lot of wins. Look at the back end of it. Panthers, that's a loss. But then outside of that, from week 13 on, I mean, you could be ending, especially if, like, look, I'm a Colts fan. Obviously, there's a reality in which this is an abhorrent year for the Indianapolis Colts. And if the downside hits for the Bears, you're looking at a week 13 on stretch for San Francisco where they're going to be able to rip off wins left and right. Really, past week 10, you're looking at a schedule mm-hmm. that offers very few pitfalls for you if you're for San Francisco.
Real quickly, because I know we have a couple other items I want to get to, I am curious if you have any opinion on the Eagles side of this, because my first thought was, like, why wouldn't the Eagles keep Josh Sweat if they were going to offload Bryce Huff? Yeah. That felt like a little bit of a strange thing for me, at least coming out of this trade.
I just think the general thing for Philly is it's just a lot of changes, man. They are very much going back to, and it's a very good roster, but they're very much going, you know what, no, like, we're relying on the guys that we have drafted and some of the depth that we have to really step up and become and continue on or become pieces that we can really lean on here. But I'd be a little hesitant of that, especially when you talk about the level of opponent that they're going to face. When you look at their team overall, I think one of the things that a lot of people would point to is, of course, like, hey, you know, this defense was great. The back end with some of the young guys was really good. Look, corner, secondary, those are really volatile positions. So when you're talking about young dudes coming in here, like Quinyon Mitchell, like Cooper DeJean, I don't think it's just like this. They're going to be just as good as they were last year. There's a reality where maybe it's not. And I think there is a reality where this team should still be a playoff team, but I think we might be looking at them as the season develops and go, oh, like maybe the back end of that secondary can be had a little bit against some of the better teams in the NFL, and that they're not this cinch to get to 12 wins, 13 wins. I think that's one of the things you're really looking at. That is a loaded schedule as well when you're talking about opponents, and especially if everybody's right about Washington, God forbid. Yeah. You have two games against them. Obviously, you have the Chiefs, the Packers. We can go through all of them. This is going to be a loaded schedule with a team that I think you can make an argument. There's a reality they're a little bit worse on defense.
Yeah, and given all their talent, too, they're not sneaking up on anybody. Yep. Favorites to repeat in the Super Bowl, plus 650 as well. And you mentioned, you know, that predictive 12-13 win season win total set at 11.5. As OTAs do continue around the league, we made the joke earlier, someone who's on a boat last week is back on the practice field now, Stephon Diggs for the New England Patriots. Mike Vrabel did have to answer questions last week about the unidentified pink substance in the bag, said that he wants his players to make good decisions. No word on whether or not any disciplinary action will follow, but it doesn't seem like there would be at this point.
Why would there need to be?
It's hard to prove. You can't prove anything, really.
I mean, as long as he's coming in clean, I think you're perfectly fine, right? So, and we're talking about voluntary workouts for the New England Patriots. So I think that everything's going to be fine. I think it'll ultimately work out. It's really just about what Stephon Diggs is going to be coming off of a serious injury for a team that does need wide receiver help, for a young quarterback that actually looks like he might be good. So that's going to be this is, what are you going to give us as a receiver? Are you going to become loud and obnoxious when it comes to some struggles that might and likely will start to arise throughout the course of a year with just a second-year quarterback? But I am a big believer in Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, not so much the head coach. But when he is given an opportunity, he can really make the most with whatever he's got in front of him. I keep going back to Mac Jones' rookie year. Mac Jones is not really a great quarterback, and that was a 10-win team that made it to the postseason. That year was one of the best ATS teams in the NFL, had really exceeded expectations, and I think McDaniels and his development and his play calling that with Jones really helped them out, and I think we're going to get the same thing here, and I think you got a guy that's got a much higher ceiling in May. Yeah. So it goes back to why I think so highly of this team. I actually think Diggs is like, it's fine. Like, if he works out, he does. If he doesn't, whatever. I think the foundation here is pretty strong. And I think they're going to be able to, I guess, overcome, for lack of a better term, whatever the hell this is.
And if Drake Bay actually looked pretty good with the skill position talent he had around him, imagine actually having a true go-to guy. Last year, this wide receiver core, 161 receptions, 10 touchdowns, 1,723 receiving yards, ranked 28th, 28th, and 32nd in the league, respectively, in those categories. So to actually have like a true weapon for your young quarterback will be huge. And hopefully he comes back from what was an ACL tear week 8 last year, should be ready for week 1. Their center, David Andrews, by the way, also had his retirement press conference yesterday for anyone who missed that. One other thing, last 90 seconds here before we hit the break, Kirk Cousins still absent from Falcons OTAs. This quarterback market is a little bit slow right now, and it doesn't seem like there's a clear-cut place for him. And I was wondering, since we haven't really heard any movement on the Aaron Rodgers front, if you think the Steelers could be a potential landing spot.
When you were gone, we played the report from, I think it was Darlington, who said that this was plan B for Pittsburgh, if that was going to be the case. There has to be some money stuff involved because of, you know, what Cousins is owed and whatnot, but I think this makes some sense. You know, it's funny, there was a lot of people pushing back on the Rodgers narrative. It's like, well, he's a post-June 1st designation, whatever. Well, it's June 3rd, and we still haven't seen anything yet. So I think if the Steelers, again, like the market is pricing them like their quarterback is not on the roster, that it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. I don't care if it's Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins. The Steelers are in a bad spot, and I don't think either one of them are really fixing a lot what this team has. I think it's going to be finally the year where we finally get this dude to have a losing record. But overall, I mean, if I tell you right now that they go and get Kirk Cousins, how are you feeling about him?
I mean, it's better than their current quarterback situation, so
it's not a very high bar to clear.
That's true. I mean, Kirk Cousins, fresh as he was off of the injury last year, it didn't look good. So maybe with a full year of rehab, he's in a different place. But
Steelers 35-1, fewest wins in the regular season.
They need help. You mentioned the article that or the series that you're putting together on the AFC East. We got plenty more to come in the NFL, including the NFL betting guide that will be dropping in less than a month. VSiN.com/subscribe. You get the guide. You get the pre-order on the NFL Sharp Betting Playbook from Josh Applebaum and so much more. We'll be right back.